Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Today, we'll talk about how you can be more economically secure, especially in retirement. You know, people are living longer today. Experts expect we'll spend about 20 or 30 years in retirement. We might live to be 100, like my friend Betty Tamor, who just celebrated her 100th birthday. Centennials are the fastest growing age segment. At the same time, there's fewer pensions available through work. Many people hope that Social Security will take care of them, but the reality for most is that Social Security will not be enough to provide financial security. Most of us will need to have savings and investments that we have ourselves for retirement. Having enough funds is particularly challenging for women. Women tend to earn less than men, take time out from work to raise children, and care for sick family members or elderly parents. This both reduces income in the near term and reduces the amount we get in Social Security payments. Women then also have less money to buy a home or other investments which could help them build wealth. Moreover, the pandemic has hit women harder economically. They lost more jobs or less jobs because they could not do their jobs with their children at home. So, how much money do you need for a secure retirement? How many people facing retirement have what they need? Here to address these questions and more is our guest today, Cindy Hounsell, the president of WISER, the Women's Institute for a Secure Retirement, a nonprofit organization that improves opportunities for women to secure retirement income and that educates the public about inequities that disadvantage women in retirement. An attorney and retirement expert, Ms. Hounsell has been widely quoted in media, including the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, USA Today, and Newsweek. You may have seen her on ABC, CBS, CNN, or PBS. We are fortunate to have her with us today. Cindy Hounsell, welcome back to All Together Now.
Thanks so much, Eleanor. I hope you can see me. I sort of seem to have lost you.
Oh, I can see you totally fine.
Oh, good, good, good.
I so can't see you look at great. All.
Okay, thanks. And I can't see you. So, it's great to be here with you. And all of those statistics about the pandemic are pretty scary. It was already scary before the pandemic for women, even though a lot of women had made real gains in the workforce and in their financial independence. But, you know, now because of the pandemic, you know, you had all of those women leaving the workforce, although a lot of moms seem to be coming back. That's the latest census numbers. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of good news that have just been coming out since February. So maybe things will improve this year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk a little bit about the recent experience and then we can discuss more the longer term. But this pandemic hit women hard, and I've heard people call it the she-cession instead of a recession because it affected women so much harder than men. What do you see happening on that front? What was it? Women losing jobs, losing income, having the kids to take care of? What happened there?
Exactly. And, the problem I was thinking about this morning is that, you know, people don't talk about it as much as they used to. People will talk about pay equity a lot and women not earning as much income as they need to. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that the pandemic has focused on is where women work, right? Because if you don't work in a job that allows you to do it from home, you're either out there trying to piece together two or three different, you know, jobs that aren't quite your focus and your knowledge and your experience, or you're left with nothing because so many of the jobs for women are in the service sector or in the health sector and or the in-person, service sector. And you can do childcare, like from your own home, for someone else. And because of the pandemic, so many people didn't want to allow folks into their homes. So that mm-hmm. set the whole childcare, system into chaos in many ways.
Right, exactly. Well, I think that's a great description of the pandemic. I'm happy to hear the census numbers are showing women are getting back to work now. Schools are starting to open. That helps that the children can go to school. Women are freed up to get back to work. But even before the pandemic, there was this Federal Reserve study showing that 40% of Americans did not have $400 in cash to meet an unexpected emergency. Talk a little bit about emergency funds for low-income people. Is it that bad still? Is it worse? Is it better? What's happening with emergency funds?
Right. Well, I think that's one of the things that one of the improvements that will come out, because it seems like, the financial industry and employers and the policymakers on Capitol Hill are all lining up to know that we have to do something about emergency funds. And so having it happen at the workplace is the easiest way to do that. The problem that I see is that a lot of the women that most need help don't work for employers that offer benefits. So will they have access to whatever employers start to, institute? But, for those who do have employers who are willing, and there's been a lot of talk about doing much more financial literacy at the mm-hmm. workplace as well, so that people get help. The one thing we do is, and have been doing for 25 years at the nonprofit Wiser, is helping people figure out what they need to do to survive in this economy. And getting people like information and sort of a roadmap of what they could do is so welcome by a lot of moderate and low income women. I mean, they're there, like, tell me how to do this and I want to do it. So I think, that will make a big difference for a lot of women if it happens in the next year, that employers are able to even, in the same way that they would provide a match for a 401k, they may be able to, they're looking to do this, to provide a match for an emergency fund. So I think that's important.
It's really important. And I so appreciate the great work you do. And myself, I went through, had a great education, went to an Ivy League college. I went to law school. No one ever taught me anything about financial literacy. And neither my parents, they didn't know. So they couldn't teach me. Not that we had a lot of money to manage. But right. Particularly if when you don't have a lot of money, it's very important to manage what you have well. Talk a little bit more about the resources at Wiser. Like, what do you have available that can help people figure out what they can do, even if they have limited resources or middle resources? I know, by the way, I know rich people who have never been taught much about money management. Tell us what you offer to help people learn more about making and managing money.
Well, I mean, the partners that we've had over the years, what we've done is train people in various communities so that they can deliver information so that women understand what's available. Like, if there's something available at a job, they need to take advantage of that. And if they don't have that job, they like to be told that maybe you'll get another job where you will get offered these types of benefits and things, even voluntary benefits, which are, the types of things like, a cancer insurance or, help with your taxes or, just things like that, that people, if they have access to, they can improve what they have and to not get pulled into scams and even lending money and spending too much money, on on kids that they don't have. I mean, you know, they have the kids, but money that they don't have, because that's the big tug. And, you know, mothers always say that, especially, you know, it's like that. What happened with that? I said no, and it was going to be no. And then I gave in at some point, and, you know, we shouldn't have done that. So, you know, helping people, you know, figure out what they can do with the resources they have and getting help if they need like credit counseling. You know, the research is really sad because it shows that women much more than men, you know, were in the report that you talked about, the Federal Reserve study. It's women who are much more reliant on borrowing, on putting on a credit card or going to a payday loan, you know, to make up those emergencies. And so I think the number that we use is 47% for women, you know, don't have that access, you know, to cash to pay an emergency, and where it's only about a third for men, about 35%. So it's a pretty big difference. And so, you know, getting yourself in that situation where you have to keep borrowing is, you know, pretty devastating. So we try to help people get the help that they need, because there are a lot of ways to get payment schedules that improve, that drop interest, and, you know, depending if you know where to go to get that help. And I think there's more of that help because of the pandemic. And so maybe, you know, in some ways, people are getting more access to help if they know about it. And that's one of the things that I feel strongly about, is that, you know, if ever you need help, it's during, you know, this economy. And it's hard for people. Like every, you know, my belief is every library should have funding to put on programs where they help people, you know, where they bring in experts, just like they do at tax time. Only bring some of those people in a couple of times a year to help people sort of figure out what they need to do. And so that, you know, that's what we try to do.
Fantastic. And tell our listeners, if you want to access this great information that you've got, what's your website for them to go to?
Yes, it's Wiser, W-I-S-E-R, women, .org, is the website. And if you want to write to us, you can write to us at info@wiserwomen.org.
Fantastic. So, and I should add, it's the information, while it's targeted for women, is also the same information for men pretty much, although men don't have as many drawbacks that women do. I mean, I know myself, you know, was working a great job, and then we adopted a child, and I really had to focus on her to help her. She had a lot of special needs, and that time helping her was like big fat zeros on my Social Security. I didn't have the income immediately, and then that is affecting me now as I'm approaching retirement age. Talk a little bit, I know that a lot of women are in that kind of situation. Talk a little bit about some of what you've seen. Why is it harder for women?
Well, it's harder for women for the, you know, one of the reasons that you just said, and there are, you know, there are all these unique challenges. There's the pay issue, there's the longevity, women live longer. And I think like right now, you know, since we were talking about men for a minute here, is that, you know, it's because the women live longer, that's the biggest piece of it. And they mm-hmm. earn less over their lifetime. And often they end up living their lives out alone, whereas many of the men, the majority of the men, are married. They leave the planet like married, and that usually means that they have a spouse to help take care of them. Whereas if women, if you're alone and you're old and your spouse is nowhere to be found, then, you know, you're going to like not have anybody to help you take care of yourself, and which, you know, leads to other expensive situations. And it's, you know, women drop out of the workforce for an average of 9 years. It used to be about 16 when I first started doing this work. And then, you know, as more and more women kept going into the workforce, you know, that number dropped to 12 and then it dropped to 9. But even last year, I'm glad you brought that up, because last year I was thinking, you know, for 2020, there are so many women that didn't like, you know, contribute to their Social Security, right? So they're going to have big whopping zeros as well. There's going to be a lot, and men too, you know, it's mm-hmm. just that, you know, because the women, you know, often don't work as long. And when you calculate your Social Security, they take the top 35 years, like the top paying 35 years, and then they throw out the rest. So if you don't have 35 years, you have 28, which is what women normally have who have children or who have dropped out, then, you know, you've got a lot of zeros in there to decrease your Social Security benefit.
Right, exactly. Of course, the other side, if you are working and are contributing into the Social Security, if you've got the big fat zero for 2020 or another caregiving year or out year, if you do work those 35 years, you can make up for that and knock that zero out. So, and with us living longer, now we're finding people working longer. I mean, people well into their 60s, even their 70s or 80s, still working. And I was in a little shop the other day. Well, this is pre-pandemic. I was in New York Central Station just picking up a little sandwich before getting on my train. And the waitress, if she must have been 80 years old if she was a day. And yeah. I'm thinking, oh my God, like, I don't want to be 80 years old and have to be working in this little coffee shop thing. So I left her a nice big tip, but you know, we don't want to be that 80 year old woman, unless you want to be working in the coffee exactly. shop. And some women do, and they're healthy and they enjoy it. That's great. But let's talk about ways we can kind of avoid being in a situation we have to work somewhere we don't like when we're feeling old and would rather be home or doing something else. One immediate relief we've got is a new president who actually cares about working people and cares about women. And he just passed this American Rescue Plan, which is one of the best pieces of legislation I have seen in my lifetime. And I track this stuff, and I have for decades. This American Rescue Plan by President Biden is fantastic. And can you talk a little bit about what does it have in there that you think is good for women, and particularly for older people? Do you happen to know that?
Yep, I actually had some notes here, which I'll find probably in a minute, but I can talk about some of it off the top of my head.
Yeah, just off the top, what do you know?
Yeah, I mean, there are just a lot of good things in that bill, like that, you know, aside from the cash benefits and all of that, there's, you know.
By the cash benefit, you mean the $1,400 payout to every adult.
Right, but there's a lot of things there to actually help the homeless, you know, and you know, just renter's insurance, caregiver, respite, a lot of home and community-based programs that will get extra money, especially in the States. And so, you know, things will get better. And I think they'll get better in a way that people will be able to see the effects of some of these programs and what will happen. So rather than cutting back, you know, which could happen, like that's what happened in the recession. So many things got cut back. And that was, you know, that we actually have somebody that's like putting money out there to preserve the programs that help people, help the elderly, help mm-hmm. with caregiving, elder care, scam prevention. There's a lot of money, you know, that just came down in the bill before this one for adult protective services going into the home and taking care of the elderly, like for the first time, a lot of funding for that. So I think that will make a difference.
Fantastic. Yeah, all of that is great. There's also money. I was very moved by the support there is for children and for families, that there's money for the, you know, helping with the schools, making sure they're safe for the children to go in, smaller class sizes. There's money for health insurance for the children, the CHIP program, Children's Health Insurance Program. There's money for food for children. There's $1 billion for Head Start. I mean, there's been a program, you know, Head Start, every study has shown it's a fantastic program that helps low-income children have a leg up as they're starting off in life, and that pays off dividends for the rest of their lives. And yet that program has never been fully funded. So there's a $1 billion for that. There's money for food for children in the schools. So I was very excited. There's money for childcare for the, you know, the families with kids to help pay that expense. So that then helps free up the women to work, and people who do childcare get paid for it. And the child subsidy, you just get paid for having children. Boom, here's some money to help you out. It's an absolutely fantastic American Rescue Plan. I'm so happy that Biden did it. The Democrats who run the House and the Senate now passed it without a single Republican vote. But I think it's going to be a great blast of support for women, for working people, for the American economy, because we're all going to get this money and then spend it. So hats off to them for that. So
I just wanted to add something to that list as well, because these are some of the things that people don't hear about. And that is that even COBRA premiums have gotten a subsidy. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you lost your job and you didn't have the money to get your health care because you were no longer working at that job, and you couldn't afford the premiums because you didn't have enough money, you know, just barely making it with food, etc. The fact that there's a big subsidy for that, for COBRA premiums, is really amazing. And that's also true with other health care benefits that are also improved, Medicaid, etc., and premiums being paid for. So that too is like really important.
And I'm glad you mentioned that those health subsidies are fantastic. And, you know, obviously we want to focus mostly on the economy, but it's no good having a healthy bank account if you're dead. And, you know, we lost 500,000 Americans to this terrible pandemic so far, and more coming. And this American Rescue Plan is also very big on just buying millions of doses of vaccines and getting them out rapidly to people. So, I'm so happy that Joe Biden is president. We have a president who cares and is taking action. Let's talk a little bit more, kind of looking down the road. What do women face in the longer term horizon? We got like 10,000 people a day now are turning 65. What can we do to prepare ourselves, or if, you know, to get ready for that, so we're in a stronger economic position, or if we're already there, like, what do we do so, you know, so we don't get broke when we get older?
Right. Well, it's hard. I was going to say the numbers even are steeper, where it's going up to 12,000 people a day.
Is it now?
Yeah. Going to start pretty soon, in about, I think, 6 weeks or so, that's starting. So we'll have like many more people. And I think one of the things that I say, which, you know, I think it sounds like one of those la la, yeah, go ahead, is that people need to really know the rules of what they're going to rely on. So people need to know about Social Security, because the majority of women end up on Social Security. It's not just some small number. It's the majority end up with Social Security without other benefits. I mean, I think because the workplace has offered the defined contribution account plans, you know, a lot of people have taken up with that. And I was someone who had a defined benefit pension plan, but it got frozen after I was at that company for a while, which, you know, that's partly why I got involved with all of this retirement information, is because nobody could explain what that meant if your pension was frozen. And then what it means is that you couldn't get it for about 30 years. And when you got it, it was going to be the same benefit as it was the 30 years before. It was never.
Oh, how awful. Is that legal? Yeah. That should be illegal.
I know. It doesn't sound right. So anyway, but that's what interested me in all of this. And so you know, one of the things I try to say to people is that, you know, they'll say, isn't this kind of a pension better than this kind of an account? You know what? Whatever you end up with in your pocket at the end of the day, that's what works out better, because both of them have their issues, you know, like the, the defined benefit plans, everybody didn't get them there. That's another wonderful thing that happened in this last bill, is that they bailed out these multi pension plans that were where a lot of people were going to be losing their pensions. And, you know, that's just so awful. So that's been bailed out too. And there were, you know, people, there were some people that weren't happy about that, but anyway, it's, I think it's $80 billion, but don't quote me on
well,
that.
Well, it helps the working people like you who had relied on that pension and were counting on it.
Exactly.
You know? Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And I remember I met someone who had one of those pensions at a car rental about 3 years ago, and it was just before Thanksgiving. And when he found out, he was nice enough to offer to, there was a snowstorm, to drive me to the terminal so I wouldn't have to get on the bus and, you know, fuss with an early morning flight. And so he says, you're from Washington. Do you know anything about, you know, the pensions or the laws? And I said, yeah, I actually, they have it. I do know something.
Yeah, I'm a national expert, by the way.
So he said to me, do you think anything will happen by the holidays? And it just broke my heart. I just, you know, and he said, you know, I'm lucky I have a job here at you know, the car rental. And he did. It seemed like he had a pretty good job. And, you know, he wasn't unhappy or anything. It was just that he said, you know, I'm counting on it because my wife needs it too, you know. So in other words, like if something happens to him, that his wife would get that survivor benefit, you know, which isn't, you know, which isn't easy to come by these days. So that's another way that women, you know, were affected by the loss of survivor benefits and a lot of retirement plans. So,
right. But just on that point, I mean, you're an expert on all this Social Security stuff, but I was surprised to learn that it's possible for me, you know, should my husband predecease me, which is very likely. I mean, he's significantly older than I am. And even if we were the same age, men tend to die before the women in a partnership. So if he predeceases me, I will be eligible for the survivor's benefit, which would be one half of my spouse's benefit. So in other words, you know, if Jack predeceases me, I can get half of what he had. And when I looked at the numbers, half of his Social Security benefit was more than my full benefit, for exactly the reason you're talking about, those zeros of child caring. And I also took care of my parents some. So talk a little bit about, like, what should we be looking at in terms of how to maximize our Social Security payments?
Well, one thing I just wanted to say is that the example that you gave is if he's alive and you go to retire, you can get half of his, and that will be more than yours. But if he dies, you get the full benefit. So you get the
really?
Full
so amount. If he dies, I get the full benefit.
Right. And that's true for divorced women as well. But the other thing I just wanted to say is, yes, knowing the rules, like a lot of people don't know that if you're not collecting Social Security, that when you turn 65, you have to make sure you're signed up for Medicare, because if you're not signed up, you will end up paying a penalty. I mean, there's like a little bit of a period there, and there are all these different circumstances and special enrollment periods. If you have, you know, if you have access to healthcare with a spouse, or, you know, from your job and all of this. So I won't get into that. I'm just saying, make sure that at 65, you know that you are signed up for Medicare if you don't have other insurance. And so, because otherwise you get a penalty, and that penalty lasts for life. So I think what it comes down to is planning, you know, what am I going to have? I have a neighbor who came to me a couple of years ago. He'd been retired and he was struggling. He'd had an agency, an ad agency, and he'd lost it in the economic recession and everything. And he came up and he put his finger in my face and he said, you know what it's all about, that your retirement, Cindy? It's about income. So it's like, Yeah, you're right. Now, I give you that. It's about income, but a lot of people don't realize it's about income and where will that income come from? And there, you know, there aren't 50 ways to get income for retirement. There's Social Security. Mm-hmm. There's what you save yourself. And then there's what you got at the workplace, piecing those pieces all together. And so I think, you know, it's that planning that people just don't, we don't plan in America so well. Although I, again, think that the pandemic may push that. It may push the conversation on, mm-hmm. you know, do you have the right beneficiaries on your insurance policies? You know, are things the way you want them to be if you're absent all of a sudden or pass on? And so I think that's what's key, is getting those pieces in order. So one of the things I tell people all the time, because it's my favorite thing to say, is to go online and get a My Social Security account, My Account. And if you Google that, you know, Social Security, My Account, it will pop up and you just like hit that link. And then you go and you fill out your information and you'll have access to your earnings. And you can make sure that they're correct. I mean, that's one of the main reasons for going on. It will also tell you like how much, you know, your benefit will be at this age and this age and this age. So, and I push people to say, if you don't have enough money for retirement, like the woman you were talking about, mm-hmm. and that's very prevalent. I think, you know, I think the first place that I noticed that was traveling around the country for various, you know, work that I was doing, and seeing older women at diners, because, you know, a lot of them were widowed. Mm-hmm. And you live in a town, there aren't, you know, it's not like a big city. There aren't like, you know, a zillion jobs just waiting. And so, you know, that's where women go, you know, and to do those jobs. And a lot of them are really hard, carrying heavy trays and things mm-hmm. like that. But it's much easier to work if you're healthy when you're 65, even though you're tired of working, you don't love your job, you this, you that. Well, if you don't have enough money for the future, you're better off working now than at 80, right? Like now I have to make up this money because I don't have enough to pay for my drugs that I need to take to keep mm-hmm. me healthy. So I think that's the planning and thinking that out, and not, you know, there are studies that show that if you work just a couple of years longer, that you will end up much better off than if you had saved a big amount, you know, for those last couple of years. So work longer. You're not using up the money you've saved. Hopefully that you've started to save at some point. And you know, the people that keep waiting to save, stop waiting. It's like not a good thing. Just start saving, and you save as much as you can. And you know, people know what they can do. They know where their money goes. Most of them, you know, if you really nail them on that, you could write it on the back of an envelope. You know, you pay your mortgage, pay your rent, you pay your car payment, you pay for the, you know, people know where it goes. And if you're spending more than that, then you don't have any money to save. So.
Right. And you're so right about the planning, both in the short term, like you say, having a budget, this is the amount of money I have. Always spend like 20% less than you earn. If
right.
whatever you're earning, spend 20% less. The problem for most Americans is we tend to spend 20% more than we earn, and we're constantly in debt. And then right. you got to pay the credit card and pay the interest, pay the late fee. You're down into a debt trap that some people never get out of. So if you take it the other way, lay out what you got, and this is my expenses, you know, save 20%. Maybe have a cup of coffee at home instead of at Starbucks. I mean, you do that over time, those savings really add up. And also the longer term planning. Now, I forgive people for not doing the longer term planning, because who's ever asked them to or shown them how right. to? I mean, I had the best education in the world, I think, and no one ever talked to me about that. So I'm thrilled that you're there at Wiser, and I hope our listeners go to your website and check out the resources at Wiser. But that's what we need, is just think a simple plan. This is what I'm going to need when I hit retirement. Where is that money going to come from? And as you say, go to Social Security. They'll tell you exactly what your benefit is going to be. So Now, there's some question around how much money do we need to retire? And we've talked a little bit when you were on the show before, a lot of financial advisors will say you should have $1.3 million saved so you can have a comfortable retirement, with the idea then you draw down, that you invested in the stock market, and 4% of that drawdown a year will last even if you live to 100. So you said, I wish they would stop saying that, because that's like beyond comprehension for most working people, aren't going to come anywhere near that. So what's your answer to the question, how much money do we need to retire comfortably?
Well, I think you have to make up what your paycheck was, right? I mean, unless you're going to downsize and you have a way to downsize, and you don't have a mortgage, you know, or you still have to pay taxes if you have a house and all of that. There's, you know, a lot of things. And the other thing that I say to people all the time, has there ever been a year where you like looked at someone and said, you know, I can't believe it, all my expenses went down. Who knew, you know? No, they all go up. Expenses go up every year.
Right.
And so we have to, you know, think about inflation and what, you know, what that means and how it affects what we have and how you want to live. And I, you know, I know so many people that because they say that we plan more for vacations than we ever do for like retirement. You know, there's some studies showing that too, that most people spend, you know, a lot of time thinking about where they're going on vacation, but forget the retirement. And so I think the planning, you can do your back of the envelope sort of, you know, you can get the tools. There are great calculators out there. Since I have, there's two companies that I love their calculators, and I haven't used them for a while. So, you know, who knows what happened to them last year, but the Transamerica Retirement Calculator. And then there's one from T. Rowe Price. And what I like about those is because you can change all the numbers as you put in, they ask you what you think your Social Security will be. So you could say, well, $2,000 a month, and then the numbers, and they put it all in red and say, none of these numbers work for you. So you can go back and go, well, I think I better work longer, and I better get $3,000 from Social Security. And, you know, when am I going to like retire? Well, I better change that number too. So it's easy because there aren't 50 questions, you know, it's a calculator just to give you a good idea that maybe you don't need those millions of dollars that like scare people, because people will just throw their hands up in the air. And those numbers come from, you know, if you have to make up $20,000 a year because of your job, say like your Social Security, and you have a 401k account or whatever to help you cover your other expenses, and then you need to make up another 20, where will that 20 come from? And if you're going to be retired 30 years, you do the 30 times the 20, right? And that ends up being like $600,000. So that's where those numbers come from. You know, it's not like you need that. So, you know, you can be saving and earning more in your investments if you're lucky enough to have savings and investments. Or the longer you work, you're not using that retirement money from your job either. And you can build your Social Security so that you get extra money for waiting until you're 70. For the years between your full retirement age, which at the moment for full retirement age is 66 for the boomers, you wait till age 70, you get 8% a year. And there's no place that you can get a guaranteed 8% a year, right?
Right, exactly. Well, so, you know, go ahead.
No, so I just think that that's, you know, that's a no-brainer. I mean, it's one thing if you look, there are the people that have a lot of different issues and they can't do that work. And I understand. I'm just saying, if you can, it's easier to do it when you're still in good health. You know, 65 is considered almost young. If you go to Florida, you know, you're like a baby at 65. You know, you can build that account, and you can build your savings, and just be careful and start paying attention, you know?
Right, exactly. I love that. And I love you're giving very practical advice here. So, you know, one thing is work longer. Work those long years. We think in our minds, oh, you hit 65, that's retirement age. That's not true anymore. That was true. You know, people died when we were 70 at that point. Now exactly. We're living to be, you know, what is the average? 82, 84 is the average, but a lot of people are living to be 90 or even 100. You need to plan that, you know, plan as if you were going to live to be 100 in case that happens. So work longer, work as long as you can. And I was just talking to a relative today who's got a lot of health issues. And she was saying, well, look, you know, I can, as my mobility decreases, I can still be a grant writer. I can get one of those little office things that prays that rolls around to the bed, so you don't even have to get out of bed, and you can be writing on your laptop, you know, do the grant writing for somebody or whatever kind of writing you do or work on the internet, even as mobility decreases. So there's a lot of adaptability now of ways you can work longer and wait. Another very practical advice you just gave, wait longer to claim your Social Security benefits. Even though you could get it at age 66 or whatever it is now, if you wait, as you mentioned, wait until you're 70, because like you said, every year you wait, you're going to get 8% more in your benefits from Social Security for the rest of your life. So you want to bump that up so your Social Security is as high as it can be before you claim it, and that would be age 70. So I love how practical your advice is on that. Is there anything else on kind of basic steps to financial security that people need to know?
Well, as I said, I think knowing the rules of the you know, like not the day before to find out that, you know, there's some glitch with your pension or your retirement plan at the office, and understanding, like a lot of people also don't realize that if you have a 401k and your employer matches, you know, you shouldn't leave a job before you know that you have a legal right to that match. And that's usually like 4-5 years. Some plans have 6 years for different reasons. But you know, you don't automatically get that until you've been there like a certain number of years. So you need to know the rules of the plan that you have at the workplace too, and all the other benefits that, you know, you may be overlooking. You may have great benefits. I mean, I worked at a place once where they offered long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. I started out, I mean, I still have it. I've had it for, I don't know, like 30 something years. And it was, you know, the premiums were pretty low back then. And it's a decent plan. Is it the best plan in the world? No, but it's a pretty decent plan. And I'm really glad I have it. And I signed up. And I remember there was another man and I who kept telling other people in the office, well, you should sign up. Well, I don't know. There might be a better plan. I haven't thought about it. It's like none of those people ever did anything. You know, you have to like sort of grab it while you've got it and know what your employer is offering so you don't lose out.
Right. That's great. So, and I encourage our listeners, if you've got benefits through your employer, pretty much, you know, make sure you seize the moment and take it when you can. Long-term care insurance now is getting really expensive if you can find it. I mean, some of the companies that have offered it are now cutting back because it's so expensive, but good thing to have in your pocket. Someone from New York Life was trying to sell me long-term care insurance years ago. And I called a friend of mine who sells health insurance out of Florida. I said, Judy, is long-term care insurance worth the money? Because it was expensive and expensive to me at the time. And she said, absolutely get it. She said, because it's the kind of thing you hope you never need it. Right. And if you don't, fantastic. But if you do need it, I mean, these long-term care facilities, and I saw it with my own father, they can cost $5,000, $10,000 a month. They're very, and they're only going to go up. So, right. if you can get some long-term care insurance, that would be a nice, a good thing to cover yourself. And by the way, when we talk about planning, I know a lot of people get nervous because they don't know what that means. And someone showed me, which I was so grateful for. And she said, look, Eleanor, just take, here's how much you spend every month, kind of figure out, like you said, how much are you spending? Here's what I spend every month. So here's what I'm going to need for money monthly when I stop working. And then you include, here's my Social Security benefit. So you deduct, okay, here, which as you say, you can just see that on your My Social Security website, and take deduct your Social Security payment from the amount of money that you need every month. And that'll give you a number, whatever that number is, that's your gap. And that's the gap you're going to have to fill. Now, can you meet that gap with a pension if you're lucky enough to have one? Or do you need your savings and investments to meet that gap? So it's actually, it can be very simple to do. It doesn't have to be a big, like 30-page financial plan. You can do it on one sheet, right?
Right. I mean, the other thing that I didn't mention either, which I think is good for people to know, is that your Social Security benefit has your Medicare premium subtracted from that amount. And that, you know, that's not nothing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, depending for various people, but, you know, it's up to about 140, and, you know, certain people get various, you know, breaks for whatever. But I'm saying in general, and then if you need a Medigap insurance, those are quite expensive as well. Mm-hmm. So those are things that you have to put on that list. So,
right. So your expenses will be pretty much kind of what you have now plus inflation, because as you mentioned, everything's going up. I just at one point of that, I hire people from TaskRabbit to help with my yard work. And just a few years ago, you could get someone for $20 an hour to help you like break the leaves or shovel the snow, whatever you need. Now you get on there and people want $50 an hour, $70, $100 for the exact same work. I'm like, oh my God, it's gotten so much more expensive. So you have to plan on that increase. Plus, as you mentioned, as we age, a lot of people have health issues. We're going to have to pay for either the health care or the prescription medicine or the treatment. Medicare covers quite a bit, but not everything. So what do you recommend women keep in mind when planning for future health care costs?
Well, if I told you that number, it's like you'd want to fall over. it's the number that they use for a couple is up to about $300,000 for premiums for everything, you know, like hospitalizations, predicted hospitalizations, et cetera. So
now you're talking over a lifetime.
Well, yeah, from the time you turn 65. And so it's a statistic from the Employee Benefits Research Institute. And I remember a friend of mine was driving in the car and heard me saying this on a radio program like this. And he said, I almost went off the road. Like,
right. Know?
He said, I said, well, I didn't make up the number. I said, I tried to hide it from people for a long time, but I got asked directly. So I gave the answer. And that, you know, so for a woman, I think it's like, it used to be 90,000, but it's a little bit more. And that's for those Medicare premiums and everything else you'll need, like the drugs and all of that. That's a benchmark. So it doesn't mean, you know, it will actually, you know, who knows, it may cost more than that, but it's just something else that you have to be paying attention to. And again, if you're lucky enough to have a health savings account, a lot of people are like funding those almost to the, you know, to the neglect of their 401k plan. Because that's, you know, it's again, tax-free. And people, you know, I know people with families that are even younger, like in their 50s, and they say, I'm putting that because that's where most of our money goes, you know, into healthcare premiums. And so anyway, it's just a thought, like, again, that comes with the company benefits if you have access to that. And it's only good up until you can only contribute, I think, up until you're 65. And then you don't have any of the rules that you used to have from some of these other products where you had to like spend it all by the end of the year. You know, I can't remember even the names of the acronyms of those things that we used to have about 10 years ago. But the health savings accounts is like far fewer rules. And I mean, not everybody could afford that. Most of, you know, a lot of the low income women, you know, that we work with, you know, are working two and three jobs just to get by. I saw a number saying that women more than men are working those extra jobs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's statistics out of census that show that for women right now, it's up to 9% of women end up having to work more than one job to avoid poverty.
Wow. So that's very sobering. You know, I think that's a real number you've got around possible healthcare. Obviously, the first thing I think of, let's all stay as healthy as we can for as long as we can, you know, eat good food and exercise or consistently, right. And that'll help keep you healthier. But, you know, that's a very sobering figure to try and raise. Very few people I know could actually do that and right. Haven't thought about it. Do you think we're heading to a financial train wreck here? You know, that there's so many people who are turning 65 and don't have the money even for their replace their current income if they stop working, much less the additional costs of healthcare and inflation. This is looking like an economic train wreck coming down the pike. I don't know. What do you see?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be difficult, and I think there's going to be a lot of people affected. But I think, you know, there's also a lot of resilience there, and I see that too. And there's been research from the Society of Actuaries, and I remember we have a couple of actuaries, like one on our board that, you know, we've worked with for a long time, and I was reading their research, and I thought, well, what these people must have really good medication, because in their 80s, none of them, and many of them didn't have, like, you know, very little in extra savings. They were all happy. They weren't worried. You know, they weren't talking like the way you and I, it makes us nervous already. Right. Being close to 90 and not having any savings or anything. These were all people that were the most positive, upbeat people. So I don't know. You know, I remember one woman I met at a conference told me that her mother had $18,000 saved, you know, when she retired. And she, you know, she was a woman who had never earned a lot of income over her lifetime. And she had that $18,000 when she died. She just never would spend that. And that was, you know, and that was what she had. And that was her safety net. And luckily, she still had it. And I think, you know, it's true. If you need 1.5 million, then, you know, it's a disaster already. We might as well all give up.
Right. But, well, you know, probably the top 10% could do that, but the rest of the 90% of people are not going to come anywhere near that.
Right. And so people, you know, I hate to say it, people will work and they'll do whatever they can do to, you know, put food on the table. But, you know, you see how hard it was this past year. Right. And we certainly don't want to see that happen. And so, you know, we can only, I think saving Social Security should be a top priority. And that's for everyone, because during the economic recession, one of the first things that happened was a lot of the people, even on Wall Street, that were losing their jobs, they took their Social Security early because they needed to pay a mortgage. You know, people that were losing jobs and money and all of it. So, you know, people rely on Social Security. I think that's one thing that came out of the recession, and the financial planners understand that too. So I think the rest of us have to make sure that there aren't cuts and that we make sure that there's money there for everybody that deserves it. Just like those guys with their pensions, we don't want to see cuts in the future. So.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, you've talked a lot about the importance of planning and just have someone to talk to think about these issues and look at your particular situation. But a lot of people don't have access to that. Or if they do, that they're worried about you know, like the life, New York life person, is this really what's good for me? Or is this because she wants the sale? Because there's always someone selling something and they get a benefit from that. So you don't know, is this good for me or not? Where can women find reliable financial and retirement planning advice?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it depends on where you live. If you live in a big city, a lot of the libraries have programs, and in communities across America, libraries run programs on different parts of the economy and insurance and, you know, different ways to, you know, operate in the economy that we live in. So I hate to say you have to look for it. A lot of times the YMCA or the YWCA have programs too. At least you can get the basics. Because a lot of times what we've seen happen, even with our research, is that people think they don't know. Women especially will say, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. But they do know more than they think they do. And, you know, people are smart in many ways because you can't operate in the economy in which we live without being smart about money, even if you don't have a lot of it, right?
Right.
So, good.
And also community colleges. Our community college here, Montgomery Community College, offers financial planning classes for very low cost.
Right. And, you know, you can learn, as I said, like we have a lot of fact sheets and things that we can help get people. I mean, what I would like to see is that the financial industry takes a lot of those retired people. And I mean, women are more likely to do this. It's just that there's a big gap between the women working in the financial industry and the men. So I want to get those men off the golf course and get them started in these programs to help people in their community.
Right. That sounds great. That's wonderful. Well, and also, of course, as you mentioned, our listeners can learn more about your work and free access to very helpful financial planning information at wiserwomen.org. That's all the time we have. So, Cindy Hounsell, thank you so much for being with us today. And thanks for all your important work helping people be more economically secure.
Well, thanks so much, Eleanor, for helping me. I really appreciate it and for having me. Thank you.
Sure. We want to get the word out. We want people to be economically strong.
Exactly.
Thank you. Listeners, see you next week.